Hello, everybody, and welcome to the 424th episode of MTG Fast Finance, the podcast that's committing the crime without serving the time each and every week. MTG Fast Finance is your weekly podcast covering the world of Magic the Gathering finance, collection management, and speculation. I'm your host, James Chilcott, a.k.a. at MTG Critic on Twitter. My co-host is Cliff Daigle, a.k.a. at Word of Commander on Twitter, and we're here to help you folks make and save money playing our favorite game, Magic the Gathering.
Hello, everybody. As always, I'm looking forward to diving into all the developments of the week. But before we do, I want to remind all of our listeners that this show is produced by MTGPrice.com, the leading MTG finance community. Please sign up today at MTGPrice.com to track your specs, chat on a great Discord, and read articles by some of the best financial minds in the hobby.
MTG Fast Finance is proudly sponsored by Cool Stuff, Inc., where you can find all sorts of cool, nerdy stuff in stock, including all the best in Magic the Gathering singles, sealed product, and a plethora of other collectibles. Use the promo code FINANCE5, that's the number 5, during checkout at coolstuffing.com to save 5% off your order and support this podcast. Cliff, what is on our agenda this week?
Well, we're going to lead off with our Metagame Week in Review, talk about a Modern Challenge and a Legacy 5K. Then we're going to move on to the top movers, both in paper and online. Segment 4, we've got cards to watch, good cards to buy for right now, and then our topic of the week is going to be the Hasbro Outlook for 24. The stock price report is going to be released in a couple of days, and I want to talk about what's going to happen as a result.
Alrighty, let's kick things off here with the Metagame Week in Review. We'll look at the Modern Challenge from this past April 22nd. I guess actually that was this morning's or this afternoon's action on MTGO. This one was taken down by four-color Omnath, which also had a fourth-place finish. Black-Red Scam was in second, third, and yeah, I guess that was it for this one. Two Molten Collapse in the second-place list. You also have a four-color Guild Pact variant, which is the four ley line of the Guild Pact in Scion of Draco. Living End still making top eights on the back of Ardent Plea post-bannings. Black-Green Yawgmoth almost always showing up in these top eights in Modern lately, eighth place in this particular tournament. Sixth place is the most interesting list. That's the red-green prowess build that has shown new life on the back of Slick Showoff, one of the ascendant rares out of OTJ. This one, you can plot it, and then on the subsequent turn, have all your mana up to cast multiple spells and make it really huge. It's a flyer, so makes it easy to get in. Just overall makes this deck a stronger contender in the field.
This is a deck running two Underworld Breach, not for a combo. There isn't a Thassa's Oracle in sight. There's no Diamond. There's no Shenanigans. This is just a Breach for value because you're playing nothing but zeros and one drops, and the more spells you can cast with that Slick Shot, you're, you know, getting that much closer to killing the other person. It's hard to imagine you go wrong with turn one, Swift Spear, Dragon's Rage Channeler, or Soulscar. Turn two, you plot the Slick Shot so that it's not exposed to any removal. They can't even make you discard the silly thing. And then turn three, you slam the Slick Shot and you start going ham. Lava Dart, Lightning Bolt, Mutagenic Growth. Like, this is all in on this plan, and I'm here for it.
It's just a better Kiln Fiend in the end of things, and yeah, if it does well in Standard and Pioneer, I won't be surprised to see it face a similar trajectory to the price points of Ledger Shredder a couple years back. There was a Legacy 5K. We'll take a look at that format as a rare occurrence over in Minneapolis this past weekend. 177 players involved. Looks like it was pretty dominated by Teemer Delver. Three of the top four lists were Teemer Delver. Lands in second, running one copy of Lavaspur Boots. I'm assuming that's to throw onto a Merit Lage token out of a Dark Depths and let it attack right away.
Yeah, it seems good.
There was also a four-color control build with three Uro, two Triumph of St. Catherine, three Bowmasters, and four Up the Beanstalk. In fifth place, Crashing Rhinos has ported over with upgrades into Legacy from Modern in 6th. Dark Depths finishing in 7th, running two Lumbering Mega Sloth out of Fallout, and two Legolas's Quick Reflexes out of the Lord of the Rings Holiday Release Scene Bundles. That's
right, the Scene card.
And lands wrapping up that top 8 in 8th. So I gotta say to you, I just finished the Fallout show on Amazon. Have you perused it yourself?
I have not seen that show yet, no. I know it's not based on any of the particular games. It just has a lot of elements of that world, right?
Yeah, I made fun of you for suggesting that Fallout was like a cultural landmark that a lot of people were going to connect with. And part of that was that I didn't have any particular nostalgia, despite having played multiple of those games. But now that I've seen the show, it was well written enough that I feel a greater connection to that lore. There's actually quite a lot of reasonably well-written nuance as pertains to human ethics and the various ways that perspective changes what you're willing to do. And the show was reasonably well acted. It's got good pacing, a lot of good, really solid set pieces and comedic setups that paid off pretty well. And it's already renewed for a second season, so it must be doing well on the platform.
Yeah. Do you think it'll move even more prices on Fallout, more than just the scarcity?
I think that it has a solid shot, especially given that you're going to get multiple seasons of helping that along. For sure.
Right.
Because there's going to be some Magic players that may or may not have engaged with the product thus far, and they're going to watch the series, and they're going to be Magic players already, and they're going to get more of the references in the material, and I think that probably will lead to some more sales.
Good times. Good times. I should go watch the show now.
I mean, I had no problem moving Fallout cards as is. A lot of the stuff I brought over from Japan has been selling like hotcakes, so show can only help. Moving on over to Top Paper Movers, all sorts of action. This could have been 90 minutes on this segment alone. We had to pare this down pretty aggressively just to fit it in to the format. Kick things off here with Valky, God of Lies, Borderless, out of Kaldheim, 11 to 16. Fresh life for that former spec on the back of New Jace, where people are hoping to cast it off the card that was going to be in this Aftermath style set and ended up getting ported into OTJ collector boosters. And I watched LSV play a blue-white plots deck in Modern to pretty solid effect. And seeing him do things like take an Ancestral Vision and plot it for free and just have it go off the next turn and draw three cards was pretty sick.
Oh, you can do that with no mana cost cards? I didn't know that was a thing. I thought if it was plotted, you had to still wait, but I guess that makes sense. No, that's good.
Well, because plotted cards don't have costs when you cast them later, as long as you've played the plot cost, and Jace lets you plot for zero.
Just plot it up, yeah.
Fomori Vault Showcase from Big. This is also OTJ adjacent release cards. 16 to 24, lots of the big cards under pressure as people have realized that they're harder to pull than the mythics in the regular set. Vaultborn Tyrant is another one of those. This is a really good dinosaur for Panthlaza decks and Gishath decks, etc. and EDH, going $12 to $20 in non-foil. Just a great dino, that low drop rate. Picked up a whole bunch of those in Japan last night. Price of Progress, Secret Lair version. This is the white and black kind of semi-abstract art. $6 to $10, 67% gains. Bloodletter of Akhlazot's Borderless, I called foils.
It wasn't that long ago. It was relatively recently.
Yeah, 6 weeks ago, and they've already exploded, the foil borderless. I've been making real good money on both the foil borderless and the non-foil borderless, even in Japanese versions, picked up at $5 or $6, selling at $20 plus, less than a couple months hold time. Not super surprised, given that it's doing well in Standard and showing up in Pioneer, and is a fantastic EDH card in any deck that can force people to lose life on a regular basis. Flowering of the White Tree, Silver Skull Edition from the holiday release of Lord of the Rings. Those foils going $6 to $11. I would imagine this is just one of the more played cards for EDH purposes. Really good in decks like Jota, where it adds ward to your legendaries and makes them bigger in decks that already appreciate that. One of the cards out of the most recent My Little Ponies release, crossover product with Magic the Gathering, Discord, Lord of Disharmony. Going $24 to $50, 108% gains. I would imagine people just took a look at what happened with the pony cards the last time, realized that this was a single fire release that I think was available directly on the Hasbro Pulse site, if I'm not mistaken.
I believe that's correct.
And just went ahead and bit off what they could. Slick Shot Show Off, Extended Arts, $8.50 to $18, as it has shown up in that red-green prowess list, and people are testing it in Standard and in Pioneer as well. And if it can put up good results across the board, again, it's going to be a banner rare from the set. Court of Lochthwain, Extended Arts out of Wilds of Eldraine. Auxiliary cards, $9 to $20. That's going to be on the back of Obeka. Likewise, we have Extravagant Replication that Obeka also loves because it gives you copies of a permanent during your upkeep. So Obeka is going to double that up, which is pretty nice. Double or triple or quadruple, depending on how big you've got your Obeka, I suppose. Simulacrum Synthesizer. You know, we flagged it as a good card when we, you know, were doing our reviews of big mythics, but we didn't see it being quite as good as it has been this week, taking over new versions of Modern Affinity, where things like Frogmite and Thought Monitor and so forth can be cast into this thing and immediately make more artifact creature tokens and draw more cards. And it, you end up having a bunch of, along with Urza Saga, a bunch of 5/5, 6/6, 7/7 artifact construct tokens that just get to work and put a lot of pressure on the opponent, force them to have a sweeper or some kind of combo answer to the situation. It's also showed up in Legacy Affinity decks, where it's doing work as well. One went 9-1 in a recent big tournament. So the card just took off like a rocket ship, going 16 to 40 even in the most basic versions. And some of the foil versions are over $200 currently on TCG Player.
I gotta say, if we're there's no, for this particular one, there's no textured foil. There's no, or raised foil, I think, for the vault frame is what I think they had. So this one, you're looking at just the vault frame foils, extended art foils, and then foils of the regular frame. There is no super mega dense chase version of this particular card to go after. Just keep that in mind, everybody.
But the foil mythic showcase is already pretty rare. Like it's a very low drop pull.
Let me make sure of that. I'll tell you in just a moment. Just for a foil, vault frame is 1 in 600. And I only say it's not one of the super mega rare chases because we have things in here that are around 1 in 1500 to pull. So 1 in 600 is the second most difficult thing you could wish for in this particular instance.
Yeah. Grim Hireling out of CLB, 7 to 18. It's only been printed twice, both in D&D products, and is a must play in Vahan. Sloan was running that in the EDH games this weekend. Really good commander, really fun. Had a lot of cool interactions going on with that commander on board. Certainly fun things happen when you've got Vahan and Campbell both at the table. Norrin the Wary is the new best friends with Satro the Infiltrator in the modern deck that Aspiring Spike was tabling in the last 48 hours or so. You basically get Aether Vial going and you start sneaking things into play and Satoru starts drawing you cards and then Norrin the Wary starts flickering in and out twice per turn cycle, drawing two more cards and things get out of control in a hurry. All versions of Norrin the Wary, there hasn't had that many printings overall, originally in Time Spiral, are now going the way of the dinosaur. $5 to $15, and I would imagine it'll push higher. No idea if it's actually going to start showing up in our top eights in their weekly challenges, but the deck certainly looks fun anyway. Swiftfoot Boots Surge Foils out of the Fallout product, $3 to $10. I think it's a weird looking roller skate, and I would imagine people are just looking at the Surge Foils as a continuation of the targeting that's been going on more or less for the last 18 months or so since the 40K Surge Foil product demonstrated that there are not enough of them overall in the market typically to prevent them from being bought out, and as a result, they are often purchased early and often. Ancestral Vision Foils out of IMA, that's Iconic Masters, 7 to 24 on the back of it, plotting with Jace, as I mentioned earlier. That's 240% plus gains. And then the top two gainers of the week, Skorpek Lord out of the 40K product and Sakarian Infiltrator out of the 40K product. These are both showing up in the legacy version called Patchwork Stompy, which is taking off in Legacy. This is 4 Patchwork Automaton, 3 Sakarian Infiltrator, which is a 1-2 with Flash, artifact creature human soldier that has Squad 2. So if you cast it for 5 or 7, you get 3 of them, and then you draw cards as it enters the battlefield. And you've got Skorpek Lord, which is a 3-2 Menace for 2 and a black that has Command Protocols. Other artifact creatures you control get +1/+0 and Menace and has Unearth. So that makes sure that your construct tokens and other artifact creatures are really, really hard to block and get in pretty easily. You got Frogmites that are usually cast for zero as a 2/2. Sojourner's Companion, which is the new Mirror Companion upgrade from Modern Horizons 2, as a 4/4 for 7 with affinity for artifacts and artifact land cycling. And then 4 Thought Monitor to round out the creature package. They also run 4 Lotus Petal, 3 Mox Opal, 1 Aether Spell Bomb, 1 Lava Spur Boots, 1 Python Needle, 1 Shadow Spear, and 1 Soul Guide Lantern, as they're also running 4 the full 4 Urza's Saga, 4 Ancient Tomb, a Gaia's Cradle. I mean, they get to really have it all with this.
They really do, yeah.
Because they get to run 4 Seed of the Synod, 4 Urza's Saga, a Gaia's Cradle, and 4 Ancient Tomb. That's pretty hard to go wrong with your mana at that point.
Cradle just seems ridiculous in here. And then all the fun things with the synthesizer. So the fun bit is that the token, the what was it just called that we were just looking at?
The construct.
The Sicarian Infiltrator. So,
okay, sure.
The Infiltrator works perfectly with the synthesizer. So each squad copy you make of the Infiltrator is going to give you another construct token. Because it doesn't say non-token with 3 or greater. It just says anything with 3 or greater. So these Infiltrators come in as copies of themselves. And boom, now you've got all these other constructs, which are
good
like...
Good point. Those are token. Those are unique tokens that have casting costs.
Yeah.
That's very cute.
And that drew you a card.
Yeah. And they are running the full 4 Simulacrum Synthesizer. And I mean, the Thought Monitors also draw 2 cards. So between the Infiltrators and the Thought Monitors... backing off of Ancient Tombs, Gaia's Cradle, and Seed of the Synods, etc. This just gets out of hand.
This is probably a blast to play. You're just like, I've got 83 permanents in play. What are you going to do, boss?
And there are many. Like I'm seeing that 9-in-1 list. This one went 5-0. A 7th place, a 10th place, a 3rd place, a 1st, a 4th. And this is just in the last few days worth of Legacy challenges. So this deck is real.
Yep. Got to get your Meltdowns and Shatterstorms ready, people.
Moving on over to top Magic Online movers of the week. It's looking pretty similar. Start off with Rafine Scheming Seer out of SNC. That mythic, still dominating and standard as an Esper mid-range build, has been grinding top 8s for several months. 2.11 ticks to 6.54, 210% gains. I'm not sure if it fell out of treasure chests or something to motivate that, or it was just the reassurance that the deck is still good and standard post-OTJ. And then the other two are the decks from, you know, that we just looked at in Legacy related to that. We've got Scorpec Lord out of 40k, 2.79 ticks to 10.17, 264% gains. And Simulacrum Synthesizer went 7.77 ticks to 38 ticks over the weekend. 390% gains if you snap those off up front.
Because it's a really, really tough pull to get one of these out of a regular play booster. I'm not sure what the distribution is for how the draft boosters work on Magic Online. I got to go back and look for what data we have. I just looked at collector boosters in person. But I know that there is a drop rate for regular play for the regular frame in the play booster, and it's horrifically low. So it doesn't shock me at all to see that this has jumped to a $40 card. And if I had happened to open any, I would absolutely be selling.
All right, looking at cards to watch this week, my first selection is probably a little under the radar for some people. Steam Vents Borderless Foils, but from the Clue Edition. I don't get the impression that very many Clue Edition things were opened by anybody but mass crackers. There is some risk that a bunch of this sealed product is going to get dumped on the market within the next 6 months and interrupt this by setting up a 100-copy wall or a 200-copy wall or something. But at present, there's only 32 listings left. And these seem to have evened out around $20. They have nice art. Some of the nicer art. Steam Vents always seems to get very medium art. I wouldn't call this, you know, amazing, but it's solid. I think it's got like a skeleton. It's kind of like a Freddy Krueger scene where there's like a skeleton
sure.
in the middle of a
Sure,
a
they're
furnace.
Trying to incinerate the skeleton. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And a lot of the clue cards were similar in that way, right? The Watery Grave has the body sitting in the fountain.
Yeah, there's the whole body disposal theme going on.
Yeah, so I think that there's a pretty decent chance with how low these are that even though there are multiple versions of Steam Vents out there, including the Galaxy Foils and the Unfinity Borderless, I could see these going 20 to 35 pretty easily for 75% gains in the next 12 to 18 months.
Let's see, foils to go to 35, that considering how, like, you had to go buy the Clue edition for this. And even then, you weren't guaranteed a foil of every one, right? You were only guaranteed one of the 10 in foil.
I believe that's true.
Yeah, there's a little like single card pack going on. That seems totally reasonable. Steam Vents is generally the most popular of the Shocklands because modern players who are on like red blue spells really want to have, you know, their lands come in for either color. Your competition is probably the Unfinity version, but that's already, you know, it pushing 30 itself. So your pick to go 20 to 35 seems totally reasonable.
But wait, a listener might say, what about the borderless versions that are available in the collector boosters and play boosters for Ravnica Remastered? Well, first of all, that set didn't sell all that well. Secondly, that art is in a similar boat. It's at 24 listings sitting at around $20 and probably also goes 20 to 35. So if you like that art better and you think it's going to be more popular than my pick, go ahead and target that one anyway. I distinctly remember Pro Traders complaining that they were like double releasing versions of the Shocks, like it was going to be a problem, but they're trending up, not down.
Yeah, the Shocks are never a problem.
I mean, they could have been in a Modern Horizons 3 type scenario where it's the biggest set printed of the year. That's just not what RVR was. It was underprinted by comparison because of what happened with Dominaria Remastered the year before. So there just aren't that many of these out there, even with the Clue double printing. And so neither of them has particularly deep listings for a recently printed premium borderless foil rare. And as a result, given how much people still need these lands in pretty much every format, I would imagine that both versions of these are going to drain out. Keep in mind, there's also the retro foils, but those are in a different price class by themselves already. Just the non-foil retro Steam Vents from RVR is 20, and the foils are already at 50 plus.
I gotta admit, the foil at 50 plus, that's tempting. That's always going to have a certain cash to it. But I think you're right about going for these borderless versions. We've seen, you know, when players have a chance to get different versions, they'll like borderless ones quite often over other versions that are available. Like I said, I think your other point, it might be the Unfinity ones. You know, the Galaxy foils for that are pushing 100. So you do have a lot of choices here. And the price of the borderless took a dive when this borderless came out. The other thing I like about the Unfinity ones is that they shrank the text box. So it's just even more of the art. And it literally looks like Steam Vents. Whereas the Clue edition is just a bunch of pipes, you know, kind of a thing with the furnace. But I think your original point stands, that this was opened in a small volume and you had to get 10 of these Clue boxes to get one foil Steam Vents. So I don't think there's going to be a whole lot of these available for long.
All right. What's your first selection of the week?
My first pick this week, I went and upgraded a couple of my decks with some confetti foils since we've seen some of them just go to absolutely banana prices. And I picked up three grave packs in confetti foil for around $40. There is less than 25 copies total left on TCG Player. It's only in like 80,000 decks online, probably because that mana cost is steep. But we've seen what the mythic confetti foils can do. And with the number that are left and the price being 40, I think it's a pretty solid bet to double up to $80 in the next 6 to 12 months.
I run this in most of my black decks, especially if they're token related. But the thing is that they're good even if you're not focused on tokens, because
It
just makes people think twice before targeting. It's a very solid rattlesnake effect where they're like, well, I don't really want to sack one of my big things. I only have two of them in play. They're both kind of important. I need them to block and or combo or whatever. So I guess I'm not going after that thing or attacking into that thing. And we've seen the confetti foils do well across the board. So, you know, this is just mopping up on a fairly obvious opportunity. Seems to make perfect sense to me.
I agree. What's your other pick this week?
So I chose the foil borderless showcase Bloodletter of Akhlazots several weeks back. I think now you have to go back and look at the regular border foils. They're sitting at around 24, and it looks like it's time for them to get mopped up. There's 16 listings on them as well. There's only a double handful under $30. I think anything near that $25 price point or even mid-high 20s is likely to end up in the $40 to $50 range within the year. Could be as soon as, you know, 0 to 6 months, depending on how hard people drive it. Sees play in multiple formats, also good in most black decks in EDH. It's a mythic from a very popular set, but people have stopped opening LCI. You know, we're in the last 2% of openings or something at this point. So having already seen it steadily climb in kind of all versions, it's a card I sell almost daily. Like, as soon as I get one out in the mail and then put the other copies back up for sale, they sell again within 24 or 48 hours. So very, very steady sales on it, and reminds me of kind of like when Terror of the Peaks was first taking off. Seems like the kind of thing where, you know, the foil borderless showcase, I won't be surprised if they end up being $60 to $80 cards at some point.
Right.
And even these regular foils are probably going to end up, like, the lowest copy on Direct is at $38 right now. So says to me that this is probably a $40 to $60 mythic foil in the not too distant future.
I can't argue with any of that. Plus, it's a two card standard combo to kill somebody. If you turn four this, turn five, one of the spree cards that I don't remember the name of yet, you get to just five mana. They lose half their life rounded up. Boom, GG. Thanks a bunch. So that combo is going to be in standard for a while. That's the kind of thing every commander player loves to do, is have a two-card combo in their deck. It's a mythic, and like you said, the showcase version is sweet looking. This is also very good and completely defensible, totally understandable. I didn't know the supply had gotten so low, so get what you can while you can.
All right, what's your final selection?
My other pick this week is Stormkiln Artist. There's a borderless foil you can get from Commander Masters. And quite frankly, this card is probably should be in more decks than it is. It's in 180,000 decks on EDHREC. And whenever you cast or copy an instant or sorcery, make a treasure. Not even a tapped treasure, just have a treasure. The borderless version from Commander Masters you can currently get for around $3 once you take into account shipping. There was a chance earlier, you know, around October, you could get this for around $1.50 to $2, but that price has started to creep back up, and now is going to be your last chance to really get in on what's going on. There was one big wall of 27 copies at $3. And then there's somebody who's trying to lose money. They've got 13 copies at $2 each, but they think they're getting around that with $4.99 shipping. I see this mistake a lot on TCG Player, honestly. But sure. This is a card that is awesome, enables all kinds of combos. They keep doing great things with treasure, like new Magda sacking three treasures to get a 4-4 dragon with haste is ridiculous. So there's just a lot of ways to abuse this card. It goes into a wide range of decks, and this is the best version that you can get, and you should get what you can while it's cheap.
I think as a personal pickup, you should just go ahead and grab a handful of these. As a spec, it's a little more dubious because I think the inclusion rate in Vahan, for instance, should be something like 90% plus because it's got excellent, excellent synergy there. But it's only showing up in 11% of reported decks, which suggests that people that are building Vahan are missing it. Now, it shows up in a whole bunch of other commanders as well, because, as you said, 180,000 decks run it. I mean, it should be selling very, very quickly. But if you look at the, you know, the pace of sales on TCG Player for foil copies, we're looking at fairly, like, modest pace of sales. Some days you get onesie-twosie, it skips a day, then it sells three or four copies, that kind of thing. It's an uncommon, not a rare. If it was a rare foil borderless from CMM, I think it would have higher velocity and lower inventory. As an uncommon, it's going to take a little longer to drain out. It is on an upward trend, but I don't know if there's a real exit if it goes $3 to $8 like you're predicting to get out and make much money. But I really like these as personal pickups. I guess there is also a little bit of risk that it could show up in a secret layer, but that applies to almost everything.
Yeah. I forgot about Vahan, and it's criminal if you're leaving out this card from your Vahan deck. People, do you need me to write an article for every single deck? I'll do that if you want, but it's even a dwarf to match. Come on.
Yeah, it's really nicely there. All right, we're going to move on over to our topic of the week. There was an analyst report that came out this week talking about Hasbro, and it looked pretty hard at the situation with Magic the Gathering. And they said they expect the company to post a profit of 25 cents a share on $747 million in revenue. A year earlier, Hasbro earned 1 cent a share on $1 billion in revenue. They had a rough fourth quarter. The company posted adjusted earnings of 38 cents a share, well below the original call of 63 cents a share. Revenue totaled $1.29 billion compared with Wall Street's forecast of $1.34 billion. They do go ahead and note what we all have already heard about, which is that they cut roughly 1,000 people or 20% of their employees in December to try to tighten things up and boost profits. And the CEO, Chris Cox, was bragging about how they would have a healthier balance sheet and a leaner cost structure, which basically means they fired a bunch of people. They are expecting continued headwinds in the toy industry near term, but believe they are taking the necessary steps to turn around their consumer products business. Specific to Magic, they were expecting a 4% decline in full-year revenue from the Wizards and Digital Gaming segment, partially because a lot of the sales of Baldur's Gate 3, that revenue from their partner with that game, plus the Lord of the Rings game is flagged here as being the biggest-selling Magic game of all time. Magic release of all time, and it's going to be hard with anything that's on the schedule, even Modern Horizons 3, to top that. I would imagine Modern Horizons 3 will do very well, but it won't quite do Lord of the Rings people spending a bunch of extra money looking for the $1 million One Ring well.
Also, it won't be two sets at once the way that Lord of the Rings was, because they released it once and then they got a whole extra bunch of us to buy collector boosters of the holiday edition.
True. Although I suspect there is some kind of holiday something we haven't heard about yet, but we'll see as we get closer what that is. There's a stat that jumps out at me here as being some pretty thick layers of bullshit. They claim 50 million players for Magic. My sales are doing very well this year, but they're not doing 50 million active players well. So I would take that with a huge grain of salt. That's like anyone who's ever touched Arena or they estimate has bought a booster pack in the last 5 years or something. Like,
I really wonder how they got to that number. That's a nice round number. They're just like, that sounds good. Let's do that. We've got, like, how many Arena accounts do you suppose there are? There's got to be, even if there's 5 million and they're looking at every Magic Online account that was ever made. So that's another God knows how many over the 20 years we've had that service.
Let's put it this way. I'm an insomniac. I'm often gaming in the middle of the night. And if I want to play something like Apex Legends or Call of Duty ranked, keep in mind ranked, that's like a much smaller percentage than regular games. No problem. I still get a game in like 10 seconds or less. If I want to get an arena game at, you know, play Historic or something at 3 a.m, I'm probably waiting 20, 30 seconds, a minute sometimes. Like, I'm not buying the $50 million number.
A whole minute.
I mean, you can just tell, right? Like,
yeah,
if you have 50 million concurrent users in any given week, then I'm not waiting a minute on that.
I think the big thing is if this is a real number, they'd be trumpeting it everywhere.
Yeah,
is the main thing.
200 million in revenue just from Lord of the Rings last year. That's a very impressive number, because keep in mind this is a company that operates in low single digit billions. So 200 million just on that product, pretty big deal. They mentioned that Monopoly Go is apparently absolutely kicking ass in the mobile gaming circuits. That's a sphere I gave up on years ago when I realized it was just like focused entirely on addicts with incremental revenue grabs, and that very few actually good games were coming out. I don't think I've played a game. Like, I have a great phone. I just never play any games on it because it just feels like trash to me. And I just don't have the patience to wade through 500 game reviews to find the one I'm looking for. They talk about wanting to find a new developer for Baldur's Gate 3, and it's like, well, yeah, I bet you do, because Larian did such a fantastic job with Baldur's Gate 2, but they have already said they're, Baldur's Gate 3, but they've said they're out, so they won't be around for Baldur's Gate 4, which means WotC has to shop that around and figure it out. It feels to me like a lot of that was that the people inside WotC that were partnered with the Larian people and worked on the game were, a lot of them were let go. And
yeah, a lot were laid off.
And just from some comments I heard, the execs at the gaming company make it sounded like that rubbed them really the wrong way. And it's also possible that they had already had pre-negotiations on what was going to happen on future games and couldn't come anywhere near each other in terms of what the expectation was on licensing. So they'll make more money on Dungeons & Dragons games in the future, and I'm sure they will look very much like what you saw in Baldur's Gate 3. But, you know, they're going to be years off from getting that done because there's nothing in the pipeline yet.
Yeah, that's the main thing. They don't have more of that on the way. They're like, we know people want another Baldur's Gate game, and we're going to give it to them as soon as we can in 8 years.
They claim that they're headed towards a low single-digit returns or gains on consumer product division revenue growth, which is basically them saying that they think they can get their shit together on toys and games and make some more money against the headwinds of that industry where they lost access to the Toys R Us completely in the U.S. where it went bankrupt. We still have those up here, by the way. And I have heard rumors that there may be a reboot of the Toys R Us franchise in the suburbs of the U.S. in the not-so-distant future.
Man,
hedge funds.
The hedge funder guys, all those guys, they already mined out Toys R Us for all of its land, all of its leases. You know, they took the golden goose and then they strangled it to death. So we're going to give another shot at that. People are...
Well, hopefully in a structure that actually is meant to run it as a continuous business, right? The bottom line is that 2024 cannot possibly be as good as 2023, but you're talking about getting to a peak in revenues and profits for Magic in 2023 and then slightly retracting in 2024. So there's absolutely no representation here, no reason to expect that Magic is in any real danger whatsoever. Think about all the tweets you've seen in the last 3 to 5 years about how the sky is falling on Magic and everyone's quitting and it's all over and nobody's playing any formats anymore and COVID and everything else, and yet here we are. They're heading into a year next year where they're going to release not just one but two major premium releases, one related to Final Fantasy, the other related to kicking off a year's worth or a year and a half worth of Marvel times Magic the Gathering products. And once those Spider-Man, Wolverine, X-Men, etc. cards hit, trust me, they're going to have another good year.
I'm tired just thinking about that. I'm not going to lie. I'm going to have to calculate the drop rate for Adamantium Wolverine on things, and I'm just not, you know, I'm just looking ahead to that and thinking, good golly, like how crazy rare are they going to make some of these things? Because they got paid. They got paid doing the one of one ring. And so we're definitely going to have the, what's the equivalent? We're going to get four of the Fantastic Four, you know? We're going to
We already talked about this. It's going to be the Infinity Gems.
Yeah, we'll get the Infinity Gauntlet, I guess. Everybody knows that one. That's true.
That's probably the chase in the big first release, I would guess.
The first release, he says. You're exactly right about that.
Because I don't think I don't think Marvel Masters or whatever is what's coming out late summer. I think it's like some smaller product, and I think the big Marvel release will be the summer of 2026. And I think that one's going to be Modern Legal, if I remember correctly.
Well, that's going to be a good time too.
So it'll basically be, I think that the summer 2026 is basically like the next Lord of the Rings situation.
Well, hopefully Magic survives until then, because I don't know if you've heard, but the sky is always falling.
There you go. So where can folks find you online, my friend?
You can find me online on Twitter at Word of Commander, as well as my articles every Friday on mtgprice.com.
And you guys can find me online as well on Twitter at mtgcritic, as well as via my occasional articles on mtgprice.com and my constant haunting of the ProTrader Discord. I'd also like to remind our listeners to check out the mtgprice.com ProTrader service. For just $9.99 a month or $109.99 per year, you can get early access to this podcast, fantastic articles by the best MTG finance minds in the business, low-cost group buys, and a super active Discord forum that will drive better returns and save you money playing Magic the Gathering.
Once again, MTG Fast Finance is proudly sponsored by Cool Stuff Inc., where you can find all sorts of cool, nerdy stuff in stock, including all the best in Magic the Gathering singles, sealed product, and a plethora of other collectibles. Please use the promo code FINANCE5, that's finance with the number 5, during checkout at CoolStuffInc.com to save 5% off your order and support this podcast. That's it for this week, James, but there's always more coming.
Thank you, Cliff. Thank you, listeners, and we'll see all of you next week on another episode of MTG Fast Finance.